Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Context Machine. This is episode 609, and I am the one, the only, Brian Chaffin.
And I'm the original Jeff Gamet. Check us out on our website, as Brian likes to call it, our new home, contextmachine.io. Brian?
Yes.
Episode 609, if you flip it over, it's still episode 609.
Oh, excellent. I think that's what they call a palindrome.
Right. That's what they call a palindrome.
Then to be fair, when I first wrote that it was our new home, it was like a year ago. You can also use that new home, contextmachine.io, to reach out to us, or you can find us on post.news and Mastodon at Context Machine.
Yes. Brian,
yeah.
Our episode today is sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, excellent. You know what? I'm going to tell you all about them later in this very episode. Figure we should do that. If they're going to sponsor this episode, that we should probably tell you about them in this episode. It's just a crazy idea I've got.
The kind of crazy, but sure, I'll roll with it.
Excellent. Dude, yeah. I had on Wednesday night, I swear to goodness, at 2 a.m., someone tried to crash through my front door.
No. Seriously? Real?
I can't prove it, and I could be wrong. And if it wasn't someone trying to crash through my front door, it was a transformer exploding very, very nearby, but there was no electricity outage. It could have been something to do with the train station that's across the street from where I live. Could have been something that exploded there, and it just, I don't know. Acoustics can be weird in any kind of structure, but particularly the townhomes where I live, the acoustics. Anyway, whatever. It sounded and felt like someone tried to crash through my front door 2 in the morning.
That is crazy. And okay, so I know you. You weren't asleep, so you didn't wake up to this sound.
Correct. It wasn't anything I dreamed. I was sitting at my desk, which is on the second floor, and I'm right next to the stairwell that leads down to the front door, which is only about 30 feet as the crow flies from me.
Mm-hmm. Or falls, since you're going down the stairs.
Yeah, fair enough. Glides downward. Anyway, yeah, so I don't know what it was. Didn't see any evidence.
Again,
you've met me.
Yes, I have.
One of the things I love having on in the background while I'm working especially are ghost hunting shows.
I'm laughing not because you enjoy watching ghost hunting shows. They can be fun, but because I think I know where this is going.
Okay. I also like Paranormal Caught on Camera. Have you ever seen that one?
Maybe.
I think it's Science Channel. It might actually be the Travel Channel, LOL, on the Travel Channel.
Right. Because where else would you put something about paranormal other than the Travel Channel?
Yeah. It definitely has become the Paranormal Channel, but the Paranormal Caught on Camera basically looks at clips that are posted to YouTube and I guess these days TikTok and Instagram of various things that seem unexplainable. Many of them I'm sure are faked. Some of them are. Definitely might not be. Anyway, the point is I love watching that show. It's a guilty pleasure, but it has often made me wonder what I would do if confronted by the door rattling.
Like the loud crashing sound as if someone is breaking through your front door.
Yes.
For example.
And of course I have wanted to say to myself, oh, I would run towards it. I would not run away. But I didn't know that, and I'm self-aware enough to know that I didn't know that. Turns out, I'll run towards it. So, I did.
Now you know.
I ran towards it, and I didn't see anyone through my peephole, Couldn't see anyone through the window. A few minutes after I was pretty sure there was no one hiding, I opened the door. I didn't see anyone. So I don't know that it was someone trying to crash through my door, but it sure sounded like it. Very disturbing.
Very disturbing. Slept
like a baby.
I was about to ask, and how did you sleep?
I did not. Did not sleep very well. I kept waking up.
Yeah, that's kind of understandable, too. Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
Ichabod barked once.
Okay, so you knew that you weren't hallucinating.
Correct. And he was standing at alert, tail straight out, backwards, stiff, his whole body stiff in a listening pose, but he would not come downstairs. I called him, like from downstairs. I called him, and he wouldn't come downstairs. He stayed. So we know what he would do.
Yes, he's waiting for you to protect him.
Yeah.
All right. So now we've established each person's role in this relationship.
But he, yep. You know, he definitely heard whatever it was and didn't know what to make of it. That's why he was not.
He didn't run away and hide.
And he also didn't go, you know, charge. Like when he hears someone who has the audacity, the mendacity, the gall to talk outside my house on the sidewalk, you know, because they're existing, he'll go down and bark at him. And
rightly so, because those people are rude.
Yes. They're like talking and existing and stuff. But that's because he knows that, at least I assume it's because he understands, well, this is a person talking in my territory. But he did not know what was responsible for this noise, and he was not moving until he had a better understanding. And it took me a while to actually get him to come downstairs.
Yeah, well, so my takeaway is, in a dangerous crisis situation where you don't have all the information and could be rushing into a situation that causes harm to you, your dog is smarter than you are.
Yes. Yes, he is. And I want to add one more little thing about that. My heart practically jumped out of its chest. I very much had the fear response. I was scared out of my wits, and still ran towards the noise. And I'm pretty proud of that.
I'm proud of you too. And of course you didn't sleep, because when something like that happens, you get scared, where it feels like your heart's jumping out of your chest. Huge adrenaline dump.
Yeah.
And yeah, that'll keep you up. For a lot of people, if they don't actually need to do the fight or flight thing, then afterwards their body gets all trembly and everything, because you have to bleed off the energy.
Yeah, and I don't remember how long that lasted for me, but you know, I had the adrenaline rush going. It was interesting. It's a wonder that my old fat ass didn't have a heart attack.
Well, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Same.
And I'm glad that your door's intact and that you
seemingly
and Ichabod are both okay.
It, you know, it was weak. So I couldn't find any damage to the door, but if it was someone actually trying to smash through my door has been weakened. The door jamb has been weakened. I don't see any damage. And it's yet another reason why I'm not sure that's actually what was happening. You know, there could be some other source to the noise, but it wasn't anything in my house falling down.
And there's no marks on your door.
I can't find any marks on my door. I'm not seeing any additional stress. I mean, you know, most doors that are used a lot are going to have some kind of evidence of, you know, somewhere between distress and use. And this mm-hmm. this is a door that's been used quite a bit. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it was, man. It was rather disturbing.
Yeah, that is disturbing. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, exciting night at Brian's.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. I don't have any recent stories like that to share.
I'm sorry. Glad.
Yeah. I several years ago, I did wake up in the middle of the night where it sounded like my door was being torn off the hinges.
Oh, my. Seriously?
Yeah.
When was this?
This is several years ago, not where I live now, in my previous apartment.
Okay.
And what had happened was the front door to the building had been left propped open.
Yeah.
And so at some ungodly hour, like 2 a.m, someone that was drunk came up of the stairs and they grabbed the doorknob, and apparently they thought that they had found their own apartment.
Oh, so they were trying to get in and couldn't figure out why their key wasn't.
Yeah. And so they were grabbing the doorknob and shaking the living crap out of it, trying to get the door to open.
As you do.
As one does. Yeah. And, the door was locked, of course, because I know better than to trust people. They didn't get in. And,
did you rush toward the noise?
Oh, I shot out of bed. Do you remember Nightshade? My old cat. Okay. So long enough ago that Nightshade was still my office manager, and she would sleep on me. And when that sound happened and I bolted up out of bed, I didn't knock her off of me because she was already jumping up and in the air. And, you know, moments like that, everything moves in slow motion. And it was this beautiful choreographed thing of me flying up out of bed and the cat flying out in front of me. And while I was heading to the door, she was heading to hide because that's what office managers do.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. I guess it doesn't surprise me that you would rush towards the danger because it was actually your job.
Yeah. Well, you know, someone has to protect the office manager.
No, I'm going back a little further than that. But my point is that you had answered that question a long time ago. I had not.
And now you have. And now we know more about who Brian Chaffin is.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us for the show this week. And
I think we actually have a couple of topics still.
Oh, right. Oh, and we hadn't talked about LinkedIn jobs yet either. So we haven't done
that. Right. So we should go ahead and finish the show. All right. Me and you. Do you remember? I'm Brian. What's your name?
Oh, hey, I'm Jeff. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you. We were chit-chatting about sci-fi stuff. And then you said, well, you know, we could talk about the state of sci-fi. And then you made some, like, wrong statement. And then I said, okay, that's great. Let's... that should be... We could definitely talk about this because I can already disagree.
All right. I think what I said was that we have 2 Star Wars series happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's true. We also have a Star Trek series happening.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Anyhow. Multiple Star Trek series. And there's a Star Trek movie coming with Chris Pine again.
Oh, they did get everyone signed for that? The last I heard, they were hoping to sign.
Oh, right. Did you and I talk about this?
No.
Okay, so I talked about it with someone else and did a little digging at that time. Chris Pine said, so like, there's one report saying it's a done deal, and then Chris Pine saying, well, I haven't heard anything. But then laughs and said, but that's the way these franchises work. You know, basically the stars are the last people to find out.
Yeah.
That's what he said. So I don't know if there's been an update since then.
All right. So because I'm crazy like that, and I like to just like look stuff up and figure out occasionally if we are right. We're always right, but sometimes we might be not as right as other times. All right. So article from February 23rd, I think, on the Digital Fix. Star Trek IV release date we don't need that part. It is indefinitely delayed by Paramount and removed from their slate of upcoming films. It had been scheduled for release on December 22, 2023. So we are not getting an end of year Kelvinverse Star Trek movie.
Yeah, there's no way that could have happened at this point. Yeah. I mean, because they're not going to. In that filming did not start months ago. That date has been off the table for a while.
And but as of February, it was officially off the table. And so my guess is that means that they really hadn't gotten everyone on board yet. So when the actors are the last to know, not only was that the case here, they apparently hadn't even been asked yet.
Got it. Okay. So
all right.
Star Trek stuff, Star Wars stuff. Here's the interesting thing. In the world of books, sci-fi is becoming a harder sale.
That's interesting because it seems to be an easier sale on television right now.
Television and movies, sci-fi has been dominating for at least the last decade, if not longer. Like, there's so much sci-fi content on the streaming platforms, on TV, and in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in the book world, it's becoming a harder sale for agents to get publishing deals for their writers. And that is only going to be because they aren't selling as many copies at the retail level.
I find that interesting because I would think that if there's a high interest in sci-fi in other mediums, why wouldn't you have a high interest in print media too?
That is a good question. Part of it could be, recently, and this is super anecdotal, not exhaustive, in my own efforts to continue to find an edge, in my continuing efforts to find an agent for my book, I recently noticed agents who were taking graphic novel queries for sci-fi, but they weren't taking novel queries for adult sci-fi.
Interesting, because I was, as you were talking, I started doing a Google search to see if I could find some information about sales numbers for sci-fi comic books. Because when I'm in the comic book store, I do see quite a few sci-fi titles, and Star Wars, there's typically like three or four different Star Wars titles running simultaneously.
Well, and that's probably part of it. So when we talk about sci-fi being so strong in streaming movies and TV, to a large extent, a lot of that is actually being dominated by, you know, giant media companies and super franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, not necessarily this. I don't know. Netflix tends to run a lot of independent sci-fi stuff. You know, Tom Cruise is always doing sci-fi films, and they're not. Well, you know, obviously Mission Impossible, which is almost sci-fi. In some ways, is a franchise, but you know, like Oblivion. What's the other one he did about? Like right before Oblivion. But those aren't part of franchises.
That's funny because I know what you're talking about and I cannot think of the name, but yes. Yeah. Not franchises, but still sci-fi properties.
Yes. But, and it's possible that the easy access to streaming movie and TV show sci-fi content has sucked up some of the interest that once would have gone to books, because sci-fi was not, once upon a time, was not like dominating video media.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be part of it.
All right.
I mean, we're like right now, though, what do we have? Like, what, Disney's got Mandalorian running, new season of Mandalorian. Right.
And they have the Bad Batch running.
Yeah. And you know, have gone through, I don't know if you could call, is She-Hulk sci-fi? Kind of like, it's Marvel's, like the rest of Marvel feels sci-fi to me.
It's superhero. I mean, there's definitely sci-fi elements to She-Hulk. I mean, it's definitely being pitched as a legal comedy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fair enough. That is fair. But my point is that Disney is constantly running new superhero and or sci-fi shows, superhero with sci-fi elements or just directly sci-fi shows. Paramount has a sort of essentially almost, but not quite, a steady stream of Star Trek properties.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Different series that are in one degree or another overlapping or, you know, not quite overlapping. I kind of lost my trail of thought, but I think my point was that that if you like sci-fi, easily digestible content is at your fingertips at all times.
Yes. Yeah. And clearly it's content people are interested in, because we keep getting more of it.
But
so
books,
I just, go ahead. Books.
Well, so much of sci-fi movie and TV content has historically come in what, you know, in one way or another, either from Philip K. Dick or some others, sci-fi book origin.
Mm-hmm.
I laugh about Philip K. Dick because, like, many of his short stories and novels have been turned into sci-fi movie or TV shows.
You know, I think Philip K. Dick, with his writing style, turns out he was a really great concept developer. And then later on, people have taken his properties and then fleshed them out into really solid TV shows, or movies.
Yeah, yeah. My take on Philip is that he was a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
Was not a great writer, but his story ideas were just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Very few that I know of the movies and TV shows that have been made from his properties, from his stories, stick closely to those stories.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's worth a lot because, you know, we have movies like Blade Runner out there. Man in the High Castle was really good.
Yes. Johnny Darko.
Not Johnny Darko. Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko. Thank you. Hey, Jeff, I'm not an idiot. What are you talking about?
Right, Brian. You're not.
Let's see. I'm looking for doing a search for Philip K. Dick movies. List of adaptations. Here we go. Someone. Wikipedia. Yay, Wikipedia.
Go Wikipedia.
Published title, film adaptation, Screamers, Paycheck. This is early 2000s. Imposter, The Adjustment Bureau. Next, The Crystal Crypt, Minority Report, Total Recall, Blade Runner, Confessions Dunbarjo. I don't know that one. It was originally Confessions of a Crap Artist. I'm going to guess that's a foreign language film. Radio Free Albemuth and A Scanner Darkly. Yes, that's the one I was trying to think of. Scanner Darkly.
Okay.
Richard Linklater film. Those are all based on Philip K. Dick. I mean, that's an impressive list of...
Yeah, and was it Netflix that had a anthology series?
Yeah, Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams.
Yes.
Where it looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12, no, 11, 11 short stories mostly were done in that single season.
Okay.
It's a really good really good series, by the way. I enjoyed that.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'll get around to it.
I've met you.
So while you were looking that up, I looked up what's coming up for Star Wars.
Okay.
On Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And so this year, we already knew that Ahsoka, that TV series, is coming.
I don't know anything about that.
Oh. Okay. So Clone Wars fans... flipping their lids because a character that was introduced very early in the series evolved into like a fan favorite. And it's Ahsoka Tano, Anakin Skywalker's Jedi Padawan.
Okay.
And just fantastic character. And you have seen her because you have watched the... Book of Boba Fett.
Okay.
And, and also The Mandalorian. So she's the Jedi that the Mandalorian meets. And we're out of spoiler territory because this is from the previous season. And, she has the two white lightsabers, orange skin. She has the head that has the white blue stripe.
Okay. What I'm hearing is, womp, 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 because I didn't watch any of those shows.
Okay. You didn't watch Mandalorian season one?
I did watch that.
Okay.
I don't remember a chick with orange skin and white lightsabers.
You need to actually watch shows instead of play them while you're doing other stuff.
There are some shows that I have on in the background while I'm working. There are shows that I watch at my couch so that I'm not working. Okay. And fine. Maybe sometimes I'll end up opening up a game.
Oh my God. All right. Did you watch Book of Boba Fett?
Yeah.
Okay. So in Book of Boba Fett, they have the whole Baby Yoda thing where he's training with Luke Skywalker.
Okay.
And there's there's that woman that's there that Luke is talking with.
Sort of, yeah.
Oh, holy crap, Brian.
I don't remember any of that. When I said sort of, I was lying.
Oh my God. It's like I don't even know you. Anyhow, so for the rest of us that actually pay attention to what we're watching, Ahsoka, we already knew that's coming out. Skeleton Crew and The Acolyte. So the three new Star Wars series coming this year. Andor season 2 in 2024. The Lando series with Donald Glover is apparently still in the works. We don't know when that's coming. Mandalorian season 4. That's I read something recently where Pedro Pascal, I believe, confirmed that there'll be 5 seasons of The Mandalorian and then it's over. Anyhow, so.
And we're on season 3?
So this is season 3. Yes. So that's what we've got coming up on Star Wars. And then in Star Trek, we know that there's a new season of Discovery coming. That will be a 5 season run when it's done.
I'm done with Discovery.
Okay. Well,
I would be hard pressed to watch season 5 of that.
Well,
give me Strange New Worlds.
Okay, so Strange New World Season 2 is coming up very soon. I think we're only weeks away from the release of Season 2 of Strange New Worlds.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense, because they in the past, they've run it shortly after Picard.
Yeah, and they like to have a new Star Trek property running basically all the time.
Yeah, to keep people from subscribing and canceling.
Yes, and it works really well. That's why I never cancel my Paramount Plus subscription. All right, then we have next season of Lower Decks coming up, and we know that Prodigy has a second season coming.
I haven't watched either one of those yet.
Dude.
I know you keep telling me that Lower Decks is fantastic. I haven't watched it yet.
That's okay. You can just say you have, because when you do watch it, you're going to play a game or make a sandwich or a latte or something.
Okay, when I go and make sandwiches and lattes, I pause the D.
It's really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. I just assumed the TV always ran in the background. Anyhow, there's a lot of Star Trek and Star Wars properties coming up. I feel like we are in a fire hose of sci-fi with just those two properties. And there's other stuff happening. Like there's Hello Tomorrow on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, that's sort of sci-fi, yeah.
I'd say it's definitely sci-fi. But like Star Trek, when Star Trek's done well, it's character based. It's not so much about the flashy lights and pushy buttons.
Well, okay. Here's the thing though. It's an interesting topic to me.
Mm-hmm.
So well, let's see what the definition of sci-fi is.
Yes, please.
Definition.
Well, I'm assuming it has to do with science and fiction.
Okay, first I need to avoid the where Google rips off other people and just gives me information. All right, science fiction is a genre of speculative fiction which typically deals with imaginative and futuristic concepts such as advanced science and technology, space exploration, time travel, parallel universes, and extraterrestrial life. Science fiction can trace its roots to ancient mythology. Okay, here's the thing. Here's why I'm going to quibble on Hello Tomorrow.
And you'll be wrong, but go ahead.
I've taught you well.
Thank you.
It is some futuristic technology, but it's actually set in the past.
We don't know when it's set. They're using an aesthetic that looks like what 1950s thought the future was.
Right, but it's more than an aesthetic. It's clearly the 50s.
Well, like I said, it's okay for you to be wrong.
Let's see if there's any internet scholarship on that.
And I accept your apology.
All right.
Look, robots, video calls, rocket ships, anti-gravity hovering cars. They have hologram machines.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of technology that exists that is not in that universe. So that's why I say it's more than an aesthetic.
Same thing in Star Wars.
Wikipedia, by the way. I'll give you a
perfect example in Star Wars. How can they have an entire universe that's always at war and they have no automatic tracking system for aiming their laser cannons for blowing up ships?
Because that wasn't possible in the 1970s. That's why.
Lightsabers were impossible in the 1970s.
That's different. That's completely different. It's a human that's wielding that piece of magic. Right? I mean, my point is that if Star Wars
TIE Fighters?
If like there is a world in which Star Wars can be created for the first time today, they would have automatic tracking. I mean, that world is not possible, right? Our world today, in part, is predicated on many of the things that Star Wars itself did. But if it was somehow able to be created,
that's why we all have lightsabers.
Whole cloth today, it would have had automatic tracking. But George Lucas was basically being inspired by the World War II movies, the dog pilot movies.
I think George Lucas would have skipped the automatic tracking, even if he was creating Star Wars today, specifically because he was, well, he's not dead, so is so enamored with that whole World War II dogfighting thing, and there's a level of excitement that goes along with the people have to grab the handles on their laser cannons and point and aim and
that's and shoot that was the TIE state themselves. Of technology at the time. I Star Wars would be different if it was created today.
Okay, so if that's the case, because I'm about to accept your apology, then why did Star Trek in the 1960s have targeting tracking? What's with starships and phasers?
Different people. And it was actually they didn't. It was the weapons people aimed those things.
No, they didn't. They locked phasers onto targets.
Yeah, but it was humans doing that.
Yeah.
It was not computer controlled. It certainly was not overtly computer controlled.
The implication was that it was computer controlled.
I don't think so.
I'd love to listen,
folks out there. Do you think in Star Trek, the original series, that weapons were being computer targeted? What's your impression? I would love to hear what people think about that. Reach out to us. Reach out to us through the website, contextmachine.io. Reach out to us on Post or Mastodon at Context Machine. I would say reach out to us on Twitter, but I won't see it.
Actually, I won't see it either.
At Context
Machine. On Twitter.
Yeah, I'd love to know what people think. But anyway, regardless, we're kind of sort of deep into the rabbit hole at this point.
That's our special way.
It is our special way. But yeah, I don't even know where we're going.
My guess is we are so close to you telling me about LinkedIn jobs.
Yeah, that seems like a really, really good idea. So let me tell you about LinkedIn jobs. First of all, look at LinkedIn. LinkedIn is this massive worldwide network of professionals, right? So I think 800 million people or something like that belong to LinkedIn, which is astounding. And LinkedIn Jobs is a way for you to find the best candidates for the positions that you might have open. Hiring, we've talked about this in the past. Continue to probably talk about it, but hiring can be difficult during the pandemic. Of course, hiring became this new thing entirely. You know, like people were being hired without ever meeting, and hiring remains challenging, and the job market remains tight. And that's where LinkedIn Jobs can come in, because they help you find the right people for your team faster and, better yet, for free. So one thing about LinkedIn Jobs is how easy it is to create your free job post. Your first post is because you're listening. I'll give a spoiler. Because you're listening to our show, you can get your first job post for free at LinkedIn Jobs. Let me find it. LinkedIn.com/ACM. That will allow you to post your first job for free. The terms and conditions apply, but it's super easy to do. And then the dashboard that LinkedIn Jobs has makes it easy to manage not only your job postings, but the potential candidates you have for those job postings. And they have things like screening questions, which makes it easy to focus on the candidates that have just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you would like to interview and eventually hire. And these tools can make it a lot easier to find people. It can make it a lot easier to find the right people. And I don't know who wishes that they could spend more time during the hiring process. But when you have something like this that can cut through a lot of the annoyances of managing both applications and job postings and the interview process, all that stuff, you should probably take advantage of it. So again, because you were listening to us, you can go to linkedin.com/ACM. It's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. They have been a long-term sponsor of the show. We would love it if you went and go to check them out. And it's a really good service for you to use. What do you think about that?
I think that's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. All right. Why don't we move on to, well, we kind of talked about what do you think about the current Mandalorian season?
Season three. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
Same.
Now, to be fair, or to set a baseline, I have enjoyed all the seasons of The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. Season three, I'm especially enjoying how we're getting to dive deeper into the culture of the Mandalorian people.
Well, not just the Mandalorian people.
Well, people in general.
All of the recent series, Andor did this too. Andor did mm-hmm. a great job of this. And now The Mandalorian is doing it too. And I assume, but don't know, that this was a purposeful decision made by, you know, Jon Favreau and the other creators were like, hey, let's start looking at the broader universe.
It was a very conscious decision. They felt that there are a lot of compelling stories to tell in the Star Wars universe that don't involve lightsabers and space wizards.
But not even lightsabers and space wizards. Like, you know, the movies, the original three movies, as well as the other three movies, they're all like what's happening with the Rebels. In the Rebel hideouts, in the Rebel bases, on the Imperial starships. You get to see the Senate mm-hmm. back in the day. But now we're seeing like people living like their life, even if they're still involved in the rebellion, like with Andor. Right? You're seeing like mm-hmm. street life. You're seeing street culture. You're seeing more cities on more planets. I love that.
And yes.
Mandalorian's doing that too.
Yeah. And I think it's great because it is a very expansive universe for storytelling. And why not look at these other compelling things that tie into the broader Star Wars universe? And that, to me, that's what made Andor such a fascinating series, because like you said, we're looking at the real people, the average person living on the street. There's no Jedi coming to save them. Most of them have probably never even seen a Jedi. And then like with The Mandalorian, you have just normal people living in the aftermath of the fall of Palpatine's empire.
Yeah. And we saw people who are like, you know, who, and we're very specifically not doing spoilers for,
right. Know, because for that's
plot,
how we are,
because that's how we are for, you know, for plot things. But we do see people who like, you know, whatever, Rebels, Empire, you know, like the meet the new boss, same as the old boss, essentially.
Right. Yeah. And for a lot of these people, they have more pressing things to deal with, like
as people do,
where they're going to get enough money for food.
Yeah.
Or they lost their job and now they need to find a new job.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I love seeing that wider world. And I know there's a little pushback on episode 3 from some quarters. I really enjoyed episode 3, and
I'm with you. I really enjoyed episode 3 as well. Season 3, episode 3. And without any spoilers, I really enjoyed getting to see things from the perspective that we did in that episode.
Yeah, same. Absolutely same. I'm very curious as to where it goes.
Yes.
I'm not at all clear on how it's going to tie into the Mandalorian story. I am confident that it will, though.
Yes, of course it will, because that's how it works.
And you had mentioned that we're getting more insight into the Mandalorian culture. Mandalore was that the name of the planet? Is that the name of the culture of the planet?
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
The planet is referred to as Mandalore, whether or not that was its original name. I don't know. That's never been established as far as I know in Star Wars lore. Yes, the planet's Mandalore. The original leader was the Mandalore, and the people that are part of the culture who can be born there or brought in, they are Mandalorians.
Got it.
They follow the ways of Mandalore.
And they have a whole foundling aspect to their culture.
Right. Which is how the main character played by Pedro Pascal, that's how he gets into all of this.
Right. I have a quibble question about Mandalorian culture. So one of the things about the religion that is the culture of the Mandalorians is that they don't take off their helmet.
Okay. For someone that watches as closely as you do, I can absolutely appreciate why this would be a question. So there are different clans on Mandalore, and the different clans can have different belief systems. And so the children of the Watch, they are a clan that follows a practically cult-like set of rules for being a Mandalorian. So children of the Watch, their thing is, once you become part of their clan, you don't take your helmet off. The exception would be if you are completely alone.
So you can do it if you're completely alone.
Yeah, so, you know, you need to do something like fix your helmet, or you need to eat food without just trying to jam it up under the hood. Yeah, so that's a thing you can't do.
Or wash your hair, because your head is going to be covered in sores.
Right.
Otherwise, that was my question. Because that felt like one of those things that was like conveniently interesting element to a, you know, one-off character like the Mandalorian, but doesn't really seem to work if you start trying to think about the broader implications of the society itself. You got to take off your helmet. Got to wash your hair. Probably got to shave your head. I don't even know. I mean, you can't wear a helmet all the time.
That's true. You can't wear a helmet all the time. And most Mandalorians do not. As a matter of fact, most Mandalorians never wore armor.
Ah.
They had a...
How do you know this?
Because I actually pay attention to the shows when I'm watching them.
Which show told you this?
Okay, we get to see a lot of Mandalorian culture before the Rise of the Empire in Star Wars Clone Wars. Okay. And so they have these beautiful cities that are actually in domes because their own internal wars had devastated massive parts of the planet. So while the planet was healing, they built these self-contained massive cities. And inside the cities, you know, they had beautiful plant life and they had their culture, and most people were just living lives like anyone else would on any other planet, and dressing in whatever they wanted to wear. And it was basically this warrior sect that was wearing armor, and most of them did not feel a need to leave their helmet on all the time, and in fact would put it on only when they actually needed to wear it, because they were going into battle or doing something else where it was appropriate to have their helmet on.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, I feel like I should push my glasses up after that.
I had already taken care of that for you in my mind.
Thank you very much.
So, I'm also enjoying season. I've enjoyed Picard. Period.
Same.
The whole series, and I'm bummed, but understand why it's only going to be three seasons. Patrick Stewart is amazing. But I can see him not wanting to necessarily do season 4 and 5. Season 3 has been really, really good so far.
I agree. I think a well-paced, interesting story. My big complaint with season 1 was that I felt the pacing was way too slow for the whole first half.
I didn't have a problem with that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I did. And I felt like they had a beginning and an end, and then needed to figure out how to hook them together. I enjoyed the season, but I felt like there was room for improvement. So far with season 3, I'm just straight up loving every episode. Yes, there are little quibbles that I have, but not enough that I feel like it's ruining the series for me. But I'm going to drop one on you that is probably going to bug you now. So, you know, this whole series is taking place, 25 years after the Next Generation TV series.
Yeah.
All right, so in Next Generation, we see all of these starships that have...
I think it's actually 25 years after the last movie.
Yes, you're right, 25 years after the last movie.
Because the last movie was like a decade after the series ended, thereabouts, right? Maybe not a decade.
I don't think... Yeah, something like that. I don't think it's quite that long, but yeah, close enough. So the starships in Next Generation... The phaser banks, they're those strips so they can shoot in a wider range of angles, and they can track what they're firing on. And in the original Star Trek in the movies, phaser banks are these turrets. And if you look at the Titan, its phaser banks are the old style turrets from 100 years ago.
Okay. I'd notice that.
I definitely noticed that. And I mean, I'm looking at that and I'm like, seriously? Why would you not put phaser strips on the ship, which are much more efficient? First, no moving parts. Second, wider range firing angles and better tracking of what you're firing at. why would you not put turrets on that ship? Yes, I know from a design standpoint, it was an aesthetic, but come on. That just really bugs me.
Well, maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe that ship hasn't been updated.
It's a brand new ship.
The Titans?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting then.
Yeah. Yes, it's a brand new ship.
That sounds like a continuity error.
No, it was a very conscious design choice because they wanted the ship to have aesthetically a feel that was like the starships from, say, like the Wrath of Khan and Voyage Home.
All right, interesting. All right, so to sum it up on Picard, we're both fans. Very much enjoying this new season. I think we just had episode 5. Is that right?
Maybe.
Yeah. Yes. Imposters.
Imposters. Yes.
The name of it. That's episode 5. So this is the last season. This is a 3-season arc.
Yes. So this is something they're very clear about. Well before this season.
Right. So we have 5 episodes left to sort out a rather curious problem.
Yes. And I am fully committed. I want to know how this plays out.
And by the way, I recognize the fan servicing of, at this point, I think this shouldn't count as a spoiler, but like Worf is involved in this season.
That is not a spoiler because that's in the trailers. It's
in the trailers, excellent. And so is some other old characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course we have Dr. Crusher, Dr. Beverly Crusher is involved in it. Riker is involved in it. And so there's definitely some fan servicing in that, and I'm okay with it. They're doing it. Yeah, they're doing it well.
I mean, there's a level of fan servicing. The decision to do what they're doing with this season and to bring back characters from TNG, that came about because what they really wanted to do was give us a proper wrap up for the TNG era cast, because what we really had for their wrap up was Star Trek Nemesis, which, I mean, it was a fun movie, but it wasn't episodic. The send off these characters deserved.
No, it was episodic. It wasn't wrap up. Ian, I had a point, Jeff. What was my point?
I bet it was a really good point, too. It was,
of course, an excellent point that... Patrick Stewart, I think I was watching an interview with him, and he talked about how one of the things that made him interested in doing the show, or maybe I read it, was that that the show wanted to explore how the characters had changed as opposed to simply bringing them back. And that was one of the things that attracted Patrick Stewart to it. And I would agree with him. We have seen many of the ways in which these characters have changed and evolved and, you know, kept on becoming, you know, being people. And that is in fact enjoyable to me.
It's very enjoyable to me. And actually this is one of the instances where, they're able to do things that are much more compelling because this is happening without Gene Roddenberry's involvement since he passed away several years ago. He actually passed away when TNG was still in production. One of the things that Gene Roddenberry held as very important for his Star Trek storytelling was that the main characters didn't have conflict. They were a team. They were in unison. They were all on the same page. The problem with that is that it's not that compelling for storytelling. Being able to do what they're doing in Picard, where these characters can have conflict, where they can disagree, yet still remain friends and family, that's really interesting. And it's adding that extra dimension that I felt they were going for by showing us how these characters have changed.
That is fair. And to Ingen's defense, artificial friction and conflict between main characters can often be contrived and uninteresting too.
Yes, it can be. But his thing was, no, these people never disagree.
But they did disagree. They disagreed under his watch. Not often. That certainly wasn't. But there would be conflicting bits of advice.
That's different. If you look at what happened with characters and their interactions between main cast characters before or when Gene Roddenberry had full control over the shows versus what started happening after he wasn't able to do that anymore, you can see a clear difference.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Yeah, and you can really see it in a wonderfully engaging way in Picard.
I actually think there were some bits that were really some bits of friction in Picard that were season three that were really contrived.
And we will probably see more. However, if you look at what's going on overall, we're getting to see the characters interact in interesting and compelling ways that they really didn't get to do in the TV series.
Yeah, that's fair. And to be clear, I'm loving this series, and season three has just been fantastic so far. I think we both strongly recommend it. And Jeff, get this. We are an hour and 2 minutes into our 30-minute show.
Oh, well, then I'll hold the rest of my Star Trek thoughts for another episode.
Excellent.
Because I do have more to say about all of this.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing it. And I say that I actually don't know what he's talking about. So I really do look forward to hearing it. But here, check this out, Jeff. And that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachine.io. You can reach out to us on social media at Context Machine. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded Dr. Boom. Goodness.
Dr. Boom.
Gracious. Recorded just for this show. That's it. Goodbye. And this week was brought to us by LinkedIn Jobs. And remember, you can post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/ACM. That's LinkedIn.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. And you can find that link in our show notes.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, bud.
I think that all of our listeners need to set their target tracking to lock on to iTunes or whatever place they use to find our show and give us a review.
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah, whether or not you love us or hate us.
Yeah, we love the feedback.
We do love the feedback, and your feedback will be helpful to other people, regardless of what you think. So, regardless of how you judge us is what I mean.
Yes. And, and to be fair, we all judge Brian. Judge me.
No, we judge. What? Yeah. Sitting in judgment is the human condition.
Yes.